You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. Today's show is brought to you by Ducks Unlimited, the leading conservation group for restoring habitat for waterfowl and all things wild to benefit the nation's hunters. Hey, dear listeners, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreeslein, and we've got a lot to talk about for the next 60 minutes. Before I kick it off, I'll let folks know we'll talk a little bit about the Governor's Fishing Opener festivities down on Lake Pepin. We've got someone calling in from Lake City. We also have T3, Tackle Tiritumah, give you some walleye tips for that May 11th Inland Waters Opener. So we all have fishing on the brain, but I tell you what, we need to talk about how the turkey season has been going in Minnesota. Brian Mosey had a story about that, and Tim Spielman and I have been discussing it before we got our segment going here. We're kind of incredulous. Heck of a start to the to that season A hunt, that ran April 17th to 23rd, I think, Tim.
That sounds right. It opened 17th, so fairly remarkable first season harvest, highest I think anyone has ever seen in the state.
Yeah, over 7,000 birds just in that season A. What, last year we killed somewhere between 13,000 and 14,000 birds for the whole basically month-long season, or more than a month-long, right? It's 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. We've never seen a harvest like that early, and I think it's especially surprising given that the weather wasn't exactly totally fantastic for turkey hunting.
Well, you know, I saw so many dead birds, I thought either a lot of people are hunting or they're just doing really well, so maybe it was a combination. But I also heard people, including one of our coworkers, saying, I got my bird, but boy, that weather sucked. You know, he was out, and there were days when it was dipping below freezing. Add on top of that some wind. I remember those days. I thought, poor turkey hunters. It's like, it's here it is middle of April, and you've got a feels-like temp on your phone. You can read of 26 degrees or something like that. But it didn't deter the hardy.
We talked last week to him about the wind. It was very windy that first period, which is generally challenging for calling. The birds usually are not as vocal. It's going into the second week, we had a lot of rain, but who's to say? I mean, my dad always said, my dad's killed a lot of birds, that first season, those birds want to be active. They want to be calling. They want to be chasing hens. He shot a bird once with an inch of snow on its back. You know, it was a snowstorm. It should have been a lousy day, but that bird was active and calling and coming to the calls, and boom. Yep. So congratulations to everybody. It sounds like they had a bang-up start to the season.
Well, considering it's more than double last year's A season, I think that lends some credence to the fact that we were coming off a severe winter last year, and turkeys probably felt that in the way that other wildlife did. This year we're coming off a non-winter, so better turkey survival coupled with, just the fact that it's the beginning of the season. I'm sure that contributed. I didn't think it would contribute to this extent, but it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so good news. And I would think we're going to kill quite a few more birds as we go. And probably I'd be shocked at this point if we don't have a total harvest that sets a new record for Minnesota here in 2024.
Well, when you're over I guess I don't know offhand what the record is, but when you're halfway to last year's total after one period. And I think in the story also it mentioned we'd surpassed 10,000 as of the writing of the story, mm-hmm. and that included a few days from the bee season. So it's looking pretty good for hunters or in terms of, you know, getting to that high water mark.
Yep. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreeslein and Tim Spielman kicking off this week's broadcast. Tim, another item, maybe not as positive. Well, we've got a CWD positive in another Minnesota-Wisconsin border county, Pierce County. I don't know. I'm figuring that's new positive maybe 35, 40 miles from the St. Croix, just pretty much due east of the Twin Cities.
Yeah. It's a border. I mean, it's considered a border county.
Mm-hmm.
I try to figure out what counties it's next to. It's right in the vicinity of Goodhue, Dakota, and Washington. So it's not a surprise, but it's never good news.
Yeah, so I think now we have positives in most of those Minnesota-Wisconsin border counties, right? Weren't there a couple last fall? Was it Trumbull County? And none of them were, like, right on top of the river. They were, you know, inland quite a ways. But nonetheless, once you get that first positive, it seems like it starts creeping out. So not good news there. I wrote my column. Tim, I just thought that was a big topic that Bob Zink had written about. We had that story from a couple weeks ago in that Journal of Neurology that kind of linked a couple guys dying of Creutzfeldt-Jakob to also having eaten venison. It didn't say they had eaten infected venison, but they were guys who hunted in areas with CWD, which doesn't mean a whole lot, and that's why there was a bit of a backlash to some of the initial stories. I wanted to point out, you know, the only reason we talk about CWD is because of mad cow, and, you know, for years and years they said mad cow won't kill people. Well, then it did. But then you also have to keep a little perspective. Yeah, it killed some people, but like 235 people in the past, I think, 30 years, roughly, Tim. Yep. And, you know, that's literally billions and billions and billions of servings of beef over the years. At the same time, cows are domesticated. So you've got a livestock industry that can pretty much identify infected animals and eliminate herds and do a pretty good job of eliminating it within that species. That's not as easy to do with wild deer, obviously, because they're out on the landscape. So I still want to be cautious. I want to urge caution to everybody that I do feel like we're living a big prion experiment here as hunters hunting these animals in areas infected with CWD. I'm curious your take. Do you think I'm being a little alarmist?
No, I don't think so. I mean, when you're talking about domesticated animals from pork to beef to chickens, there are all kinds of safeguards in place, safeguards to the extent sometimes that you don't want to eat the meat that you get from those places, just the way some of it is commercially treated. But deer are a whole different animal, so to speak. You know, that's, like you said, it's a wild animal. A lot of people cut up their own. They're not going through testing of the, well, I mean, there's testing, but it's just not as regimented as it is with domesticated animals. So it's a little bit of apples to oranges, yes.
Yeah. So, like I said, my opinion of CWD hasn't changed a whole lot from 20, 25 years ago when it first became a story. But at the same time, I think we got to be cautious and continue to deliver intensive management. There's folks who think we shouldn't be doing that, but no one's convinced me otherwise so far.
Yeah, I'm not going to step up to the plate and eat an animal that's sick.
Yep.
And if there's testing available to find out if that's the case or not, I'd certainly take part in it.
And Tim, I sent you a photo that my dad had gotten on a trail cam of a deer that looked pretty rough, and I sent it to a couple DNR people, and I'm a little trigger happy on these things because I'm worried about CWD where I hunt, and I sent it to two DNR wildlife folks, including Eric Hildebrand, who's kind of Mr. CWD, and he said it really looks to him like a deer that's just coming off a more stressful winter than you would expect, considering it wasn't that tough of a winter. But he said he didn't see any sign that would suggest CWD. So I was glad of that, and I'm letting you know that too now.
Right.
Before we go, Tim, you wrote a pretty good news story about the Wisconsin does its spring hearings, and they do all this voting, Conservation Congress, on a lot of different topics. None of it's necessarily binding. It always makes fun reading. But they offer an opinion on a topic we've been talking about here quite a bit. I'll let you talk.
Well, just for a real short background, which was, I tried to explain this in the story, but Minnesotans aren't maybe familiar with what Wisconsin does, but they have a Conservation Congress that has chapters in each county that can put forth resolutions that would go to the spring hearings that are conducted in each county every spring, first or second week in April. And people vote on a whole host of things, from fish-related matters to wildlife-related matters to even cats this year, which was about wildlife as well. But the one that stuck out because of how much interest it's gotten in Minnesota and elsewhere, including at the DNR Roundtable, at fisheries work groups, is that of the latest technology, which has been around for a while now, but it's the live scopes or 360 imaging or forward-facing sonar. There's a lot of discussion about its usage. Should it be limited? Should it be banned? And at the hearing, there was a at the Wisconsin hearings, there was a question that basically flat out said, should this sort of technology be banned? There was no in this case or that case. It was pretty straightforward and to the point. And I think there were some 18,000, almost 19,000 people that responded at the hearings or online, and 36% were in support of a ban. Not a majority, but 33% were not in favor of it. And then there was a pretty large segment, 17%, that didn't have an opinion on the question. So, yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people are go to these can be, you know, maybe they don't even fish.
Sure.
Most of the people I know who do go to these hearings, they're anglers and they're hunters as well. But some people probably haven't really heard of this and really don't care. It's just another interesting take from a state that has it front and center on its radar in terms of its effect on fisheries. So I thought it was, that's in terms of people being surveyed regarding something like that. And maybe it wasn't a real focused group, but still you had high numbers.
Oh, yeah. And
you could take something away from it, I think. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting. And honestly, I wasn't real surprised that it was a fairly even split.
I was talking to Dan Durbin, who works for Outdoor News over in that Milwaukee area, about that vote. And he thought, it was interesting. He thought for it to have any sort of momentum to actually for a ban to get going, there's like a million more steps would have to occur, including the legislature, for it to probably advance. He thought it would have to be a much bigger gap. You know, he thought it would have to be 70-20 kind of thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it's the horses left the stable, cats out of the bag.
Exactly. Certainly. Yeah.
It's a total ban. Something dramatic would have to happen for a total ban. So this question was sort of, I don't know how useful it was, but it's interesting. And it doesn't mean that there could be something regulations related regarding that sort of technology in the future. And people in Minnesota, including Tom Newstrom, who I interviewed to get a Minnesota perspective, said the same thing, that it could be a ways down the road, but it could mean, at the simplest, reduce fishing limits in some cases. So,
yeah, I'm glad you reported it, Tim. It's the closest thing we've had to kind of a public temperature survey on how they feel about this thing, so this technology. So.
Yep.
Well, Tim, we're out of time, but thank you. There's a lot of other interesting nuggets in that story that I'd encourage folks to check out on the front page of this week's Minnesota Outdoor News. Tim, thanks. Have a good week ahead.
Yep, you too.
All right, we will break. We will talk a little bit about the governor's fishing opener when we return. You're listening to Outdoor News Radio.
Ready for your next fishing adventure? Look no further than Lake City, Minnesota. Located in southeast Minnesota, nestled along the shores of Lake Pepin, this charming town offers some of the best fishing in the Midwest. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, Lake Pepin is teeming with walleye, bass, and more. And when you're not on the water, explore Lake City's quaint shops, delicious dining, and scenic beauty. Go to visitlakecity.org today and plan your trip to Lake City, Minnesota's South Shore.
Looking for the perfect summer getaway? Look no further than Minnesota's own Lake of the Woods. Welcome to the walleye capital of the world, where the next hook set could be your personal best fish of a lifetime. But it's not just about the fishing. From cozy resorts to charming lodges, Lake of the Woods offers summer fun for everyone. Plus, our charters and expert fishing guides are ready to make your experience unforgettable. Discover the magic of Lake of the Woods. Visit lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Spring is here and your next outdoor adventure awaits. From hiking and biking our picturesque trails to kayaking or fishing our lake and waterways, Mason City and Clear Lake, Iowa offer endless opportunities for outdoor recreation. Gather your friends and family and discover the beauty of nature as you explore our stunning landscapes and immerse yourself in unforgettable experiences. Learn more at thisisnorthiowa.com.
Unleash the power of the Onyx Hunt app this turkey season and see how it'll become one of the best tools in your turkey vest. Use color-coded public and private land ownership information, tree species, and crop layers to scout from the comfort of your home. Then hit the field using compass mode, waypoints, and multiple base maps to help pin down more gobblers this spring. Use promo code ODN20 to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt.
Since 1967, generations of Minnesota sportsmen have trusted Outdoor News to keep them up to date with the latest news, pro tips, features, fishing reports, gear reviews, and more. For less than a buck per week, you can carry on the tradition and join thousands of Minnesota sportsmen by subscribing to Outdoor News. Whether you prefer a printed copy in your mailbox each week or the convenience of up-to-the-minute news on your smartphone or computer, we've got you covered. Subscribe today at outdoornews.com/subscribe.
Chasen's Guide Service is your top option for Alaska's Kenai River salmon and trout fishing. If an Alaskan adventure is in your future, the Kenai River is essential to your experience, and to get the best river adventure, make it a day on the water with one of the experienced guides from Chasen's Guide Service. Chasen is already taking reservations for the summer of 2024, so visit chasensguideservice.com for more information. That's chasensguideservice.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Jerisline with you for another segment. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you like the broadcast. If you do, check us out online at outdoornews.com, or you can give us a call at 800-535-5191. Hey, as I mentioned, next weekend is the Inland Waters Fishing Opener in our fine state of Minnesota, May 11th, Saturday, May 11th. And, you know, I'm an old river rat, so sometimes I have to admit, I don't get all worked up about fishing opener because on the river, we'd been fishing as soon as the ice went out, right? We've been out in our boats. So that's how I grew up. That's a good opportunity to kind of swing back and note that the governor's fishing opener is actually on the river this year, specifically Lake Pepin. And here to promote that and talk about that great area for fishing and talk about that event a little bit is Jim Seward. You might say that Jim is the fishing coordinator for the 2024 governor's opener down in Lake City, and he's with us now. Jim, thanks for carving out some time. I'm sure you're very busy getting ready.
Absolutely. A lot of great things getting prepped for this great event.
Yeah. What you make of my little intro there? Do you ever kind of smirk a little bit when they talk about fishing openers and you realize I've been fishing for months on open water?
Yeah, it's, you know, a lot of people find it sort of strange. A lot of people don't even know you can fish year round here. And, you know, in the springtime already this year up by Red Wing on pool four here, there's 300-400 boats out every weekend. So yeah, we're fortunate.
And it's an incredible body of water that I think a lot of folks don't think about, especially maybe in the Twin Cities. Everybody's always looking north. We're all going to head north. So Lake Pepin is kind of a wide spot in the Mississippi River. You've got the confluence of the Big Chippewa River downstream, but it's a kind of a natural reservoir, isn't it? It's fairly shallow and a really awesome walleye fishery, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, Lake Pepin's 24 miles long. The widest part is just right around 3 miles. So we got 53,000 acres of water that we can fish here. And as you mentioned, it isn't a deep lake / river, but, you know, it's just loaded with structure. And it's probably, hands down, probably one of the best fisheries for walleyes in the state of Minnesota.
And you and I were talking a little off here before we got going. The river in general can be a challenging fishery in some ways. There's a lot of fish in it, but you've got that variable of changing water levels as because of the lock and dance system, at least in part. I mean, also you get like right now, we got a ton of rain coming down through the system that's probably affecting water levels that, you know, kind of changes the dynamic from your average Minnesota lake. So I think some of the best walleye fishermen in the country are on the Mississippi River in that stretch of Minnesota and Wisconsin border waters.
Absolutely agree. As you mentioned, the water fluctuations, rain will affect it. And where you think where you catch walleyes yesterday, they may have moved today. So it really is a challenging, but when you find them, it's lights out. And this lake has really also sort of come into its own in the June, July timeframe of suspended fish. Some of the biggest walleyes we catch out here are suspended in the June, July, where when the mayfly hatch is happening, everyone's like, oh, can't go fishing. We won't catch no fish. That is the best time to be out here for big walleyes.
That mayfly hatch is quite a spectacle if you've never seen it before. Well, hey, let's talk about the governor's opener. You know, a couple of river guys here talking about all the fun parts of working and living on the Mississippi River. But we need to talk about this big event. The festivities actually begin on this Friday, May 10th. And then, of course, the opener is on the 11th. The governor walls will be down there. It's my understanding this is the 76th governor's fishing opener, that this event first started in 1948. I think it was down in the river, maybe upstream a little bit. back during the Arnie Carlson years, if memory serves, in the late 90s. Do you recall that, Jim?
Absolutely. I participated. It was the 50th anniversary, and a good friend, Ralph Dierks, led that charge up in Red Wing for the governor's opener. It was a great event, caught a lot of fish, and we're going to be doing the same thing down here for this governor's opener.
It's kind of the unofficial kickoff to tourism season, isn't it? The governor's fishing opener. And how many boats, how many people are going to be out participating in this event? You've been the guy putting all the boats together, right? How many people are you going to get out there working for walleyes?
Yeah, so between the media and actual people out fishing, will be around 200. So, you know, expect right around probably 75, 80 people actually partaking in the fishing part. And then the rest just out learning about the lake, going and following the governor around in his boat, and just watching and taking in the beauty of this area.
It is a beautiful area, and it's really prime right now. You know, the leaves are popping, and you get that early spring, just like almost fluorescent green in the trees when you look up, you know, surrounded by the bluff country down there. A lot of Minnesotans, I think, in the Twin Cities have never been down Highway 61, the River Road, and enjoyed the beauty that we have in that part of the state. So I want to encourage folks to check that out, too. Let's talk fishing. You were telling me off air, it's been a good spring on the river.
Excellent spring, actually. Lake Pepin, the DNR, released their creel survey here a few months back. The walleye population is at the highest level ever since the DNR has been recording. And the sauger population is really coming back. I mean, it's been getting stronger and stronger every year. So it's in prime condition to be just an unbelievable opener. There's so many ways a person can fish down here. You'll have people pulling lead line, crankbaits, three-way and leeches and nightcrawlers, jigging, casting. All those methods work out here, and every one of them will be used next week, and it'll be effective.
You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisine with you. We're talking with Jim Seward, the fishing coordinator for the 2024 Governor's Fishing Opener next weekend down in Lake City. Lake Pepin is kind of the home water for the event this year. We're talking a lot about walleye fishing, but there's a lot of other great species to fish down there. You can catch a big pike on Lake Pepin or some of those backwaters. There's bass fishing, crappies, you name it. But does it all come back to walleyes for you, Jim?
It all comes back to walleye. And one of the species that's really taken off in the last few years, and the guides on Lake Pepin and in Pool 4 are really focusing in on, is the perch population. One of the things, you know, this lake has become clear. And with that, there's more weed growth out in the lake. Zebra mussels did play a part on that.
Yep.
And the perch population is just, whether it's through the ice or open water, is second to none right now. I mean, it's just fantastic. But I'm a walleye guy, been a walleye guy my whole life. I've traveled the country walleye fishing. I'm hard pressed to say there's a better place for not just walleye fishing, but as you mentioned, Rob, for every type of species, this is the place. This is the best there is.
We should probably do a story on Outdoor News about that perch phenomenon down there, because I've gone out with my dad downriver down the Winona area. We've gotten into some good perch fishing in it. Yeah, I think we've kind of had this, where did these perch come from? And that's interesting. You think it might be partially related to the zebra mussel thing. You mentioned saugers also. A lot of people listening might say, what's a sauger? It's also in the perch family. It looks more like a walleye than a perch. Doesn't get quite as big as a walleye, but you can get great numbers of them on the river.
Absolutely. And, you know, what we find, walleyes tend to be more, they're specific more to certain areas, where your saugers are specific to certain areas, but they do intermingle. But yeah, and what's crazy with Lake Pepin, it's one of the fastest growing fishery for the fish. For a walleye or a sauger to get to 15 inches, we're talking 3 years. So it's a very fertile body of water, and the walleye and sauger population is just through the roof. I had some friends this year that caught 24-inch saugers, you know, during the spring.
Wow. Full spawn. Pushing
6-pound saugers. And, you know, my grandpa, I remember ice fishing up by Frontenac, caught one that was almost 7 pounds. So, I mean, these aren't your 14, 15-inch saugers down here. These are some of the absolute giants.
The governor's opener is going to come and go next weekend, but there's a lot of tournaments that occur on Lake Pepin throughout the year. A lot of great fishing. You mentioned, you know, June and July being great months for fishing walleyes. I want to encourage folks to consider a trip to Lake City anytime this year and go and explore that marvelous area. You're, like I said, you're a big tournament guy, right, Jim?
I do. I fish professionally for many years. Now I just run a bunch of local tournaments for charities and such. But, you know, my passion has always been out on a body of water, enjoying the fishing. Catching the fish is just a bonus, but there sure seems to be a lot of bonuses that can be caught out here on Lake Pepin. So it's a great way to spend time with my kids and family and friends. And it's a passion for us down here.
Well, talking to you the past few minutes, it's been very clear. You love fishing, but I would say you certainly like to get back to Lake Pepin. It seems like your home water, and it takes a lot to drag you away for good reason. It's a tremendous fishery and a tremendous area. Congratulations to you. Having a good time down there, Jim.
Hey, thank you.
One last time, if folks are interested, mngovernorsopener.com if they want more details about the event. Well, I'm sure a lot of the general public will be down for the festivities. Should be quite a party.
You bet. Looking forward to it.
Jim, thanks a lot for spending a segment with me. Good luck. I'm going to have some staff down there. I'll try to swing down myself, but I'm sure it's going to be a good time. Thanks for spending a segment with me.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Jim Seward, representing the community of Lake City for the 2024 Governor's Fishing Opener. Home water is on Lake Pepin. We're going to grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Fort Dodge, Iowa? Outdoor and entertainment adventures are awaiting you. Discover Iowa's largest off-highway vehicle park, Gypsum City OHV Park, with 60 miles of trails, mudding areas, tracks, and an obstacle course. The area also boasts water, paved mountain bike, and equestrian trails. Head into town to enjoy public art and studios, an orchard, aquatic center, and family entertainment venue. Fill up with excellent Korean cuisine, pizza, ice cream, craft beer, or local wines. For more information, visit DodgeTheOrdinary.com.
Spring is here and your next outdoor adventure awaits. From hiking and biking, our picturesque trails, to kayaking or fishing our lake and waterways, Mason City and Clear Lake, Iowa offer endless opportunities for outdoor recreation. Gather your friends and family and discover the beauty of nature as you explore our stunning landscapes and immerse yourself in unforgettable experiences. Learn more at thisisnorthiowa.com.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today.
Great weather means it's time for kids to go out and play, but kids aren't the only ones outdoors. Ticks that spread Lyme disease and other infections are also active in the spring and summer. CDC reminds you and your children to wear insect repellent, bathe or shower as soon as possible after coming indoors, and check for ticks daily. If you've been bitten by a tick and develop fever, rash, or fatigue, seek medical care. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/Lyme.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again. Then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Jerusalem. Happy to be with you for another segment. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what we do here, please check us out online at OutdoorNews.com, where you can subscribe to our print or digital versions of our newspaper and our website, or give us a call at 800-535-5191. Hey, next Saturday, May 11th, is the 2024 Minnesota Walleye Opener, Inland Waters Opener here in our fine state. And that must mean it's time to check in with our buddy Tackle Terry Tuma, longtime contributor to Outdoor News, pro fisherman, and it's really good to see you here, Terry. We got open water, and you got to be pretty excited to hit the lakes, huh?
I sure am, Robin. It's great to visit with you and all of our listeners. Yes, I'm really looking forward to it. It's been sort of a very different spring, if you will, with the low water levels, with the wind, but very much so looking forward to the opener.
Terry, water levels very low coming out of winter, right? We had a drought last year. We had no snow, hardly at all. A little snow late in the winter that maybe contributed to some runoff. But, I mean, as we exited winter, water levels were very low. We had some recent rains. Are water levels bouncing back out there?
Yes, they are, Rob. In fact, quite a little bit. We're starting to see the water levels come back up, which is great news for people using accesses and even the people that live on the lakes. But it definitely is coming up, and with hopefully more rain coming, that should bring it up again.
Terry, what went on with the walleye spawn this year, given the fact that ice out occurred so early, right? I mean, record ice outs almost everywhere across Minnesota's lake belt. Did walleyes knock the spawn out earlier, or is that more water temperature focused? What are you hearing in terms of where the walleyes are spawning-wise?
Well, I think what's really taking place, Rob, that's a pretty common question, is yes, it's water temperature, no question about that, but I also feel that there's almost like an internal clock with these walleyes, or with any species of fish, that it's time to spawn, they're going to spawn.
Okay, but if you were an average Minnesota angler heading out this coming Saturday on a central Minnesota lake, where would you guess the walleyes would be based on spawning behavior?
First of all, what I would do is just sort of monitor the lake, run the lake, and just see some of the structural locations. They're going to be relating to structure and also weeds or weed edges. With the clear water, with the lack of runoff and so forth, we're going to have some pretty good weed growth, and these walleyes can be hunkered right in there. Also, some of your rock piles, some of the tapered points, your drop-offs, and two, depending on water temperature, we've caught a lot of fish in the mid part of the state tossing jigs up on some of the rocks up on shoreline.
But back to the spawn, do you think the fish will be spawned out come this Saturday, May 11th, Terry? Will it be kind of in a post-spawn funk, or do you think there might even still be some spawning activity going on, say, in southern and central Minnesota?
I really feel that the spawn is going to be done. We're probably going to enter, as you mentioned, that post-spawn time frame, and that's a little bit of a tougher bite, but you can still catch the males. But along, too, if you find a location on a specific lake where that they've spawned out and they're progressing more for that pre-summer time frame, you can have an awfully good bite. That's a recuperation time, and these fish will feed very heavily.
Yeah, it's funny. Almost every year, it doesn't matter how early or late spring is, around that fishing opener, you're usually kind of encountering post-spawn walleyes, aren't you?
Yeah, you really are. It very depends upon, the lake water temperatures. But normally, yes, we are dealing with that.
Terry, you mentioned runoff and low runoff. You said that maybe means clear water, and so the weeds are potentially already taking off. Clear water also means maybe walleyes moving a little deeper, right? I mean, walleyes like cloudy, I wouldn't say dirty water, but they're built for low light water column, correct?
Yes, they are. And yes, they can definitely be a little bit deeper. There's no question about that. And then two, low light walleyes, too, are going to relate to, wind conditions, clouds. These are all factors in.
It has been a windy year, hasn't it?
Oh, yes, it has. But that's mm-hmm. part of the reason that we haven't been out on the water very much because of the wind.
Yeah, you listen to Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tackle Terry Tumo. We are kicking off this week's broadcast. Lake Pepin will be hosting the Governor's Fishing Opener next weekend. Tackle Terry's got a place down there, too. And the whole state, all the inland waters statewide, kick in on May 11th with the general inland waters fishing opener. The river, of course, has been open all year, hasn't it?
And, yeah, it really has, Rob.
What was the general vibe, Terry, I guess, below the dams on the river, when it wasn't too windy to get out?
Generally speaking, it was good. I talked to quite a few anglers. They caught some good fish, numbers of fish. And the amazing part of it was that it was just unbelievable attendance, to a point where I talked to an angler who left at 3 o'clock in the morning just to get a parking spot. So it was bumper boat time for me, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
But then I also talked to another angler, and he said they caught not only up by the dam, but further down from the dam, just beyond Red Wing, that they caught a lot of walleye. So here again, too, we have this tendency just to Red Wing and the dam, not just right below the dam, but further on down. And we've caught a lot of walleye further down. Get away from that bumper boat, which I refuse to fish anymore.
The DNR was issuing press releases not that long ago, just over a month ago, talking about low water at boat launches around the state. Are you optimistic that we're going to bounce back and that's going to be less of an issue here as we kick off our regular opener?
I think it is. In fact, when we were on the river last week, the water already was coming up. Then, of course, with the recent rains, I expect it's going to be coming up. It won't be normal unless we get lots of rain, but definitely coming up. And that's going to pertain to all of our lakes also.
So, Terry, let's talk some presentations. What do you like to use on a Minnesota lake for Minnesota opener? And I guess if we're facing walleyes that are going to be a little lethargic post-spawn, what are you dropping down to try to entice them to bite?
First of all, I would start now, for instance, on a river, it'll be a jig for sure, either with plastic or with minnows. And the other two, if it's going to be inland body of water or also on the river system, a live bait rigs with leeches. We've had a lot of questions about using leeches at this time of the year, and yes, you can. Going to be an entroning crankbaits, also very, very productive, even though many anglers just shy away from them. And then three-way silver rigs, especially on the river system.
What's the live bait situation right now, Terry? Are we sitting in pretty good position? I haven't heard any complaining or concerns, which would suggest no news is good news, but it can sneak up on us too.
Yeah, it really, it's been a good season so far. And part of the reason, Rob, and it's a good question, is that they had an abundance of bait because of the demand and then also the mild winter. So I have heard zero reports about shortages of minnows and leeches and crawlers at all. So I anticipate that we're going to see a good buying season for the bait shops.
We probably didn't have too many ponds freeze out. I guess bottom line, you're hearing good things about the live bait situation going into next weekend.
Oh, very much so. In fact, I've got a friend that lives on one of these ponds where they come and seine the minnows and so forth, and it's been a very, very good supply. And as you mentioned, the ponds haven't froze out. In fact, I don't know of any lake that has froze out. And the big factor, too, was towards the end of the season, just prior to the ice, which went out very early, they were not able to seine any bait, so therefore that's another plus. So there's plenty of bait. They haven't lost any bait at all.
Good. So optimistic outlook, I would say, for next weekend. It seems like we're getting into a fairly stable weather forecast for the coming week. I don't see any drastic weather changes in terms of temperature. Some storms kind of moving through on and off, which is interesting since we really didn't have a lot of turbulent weather for the better part of the past 8-9 months. But April kicked in. It got real, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did, and I think we're going to have a really good opener, especially with the mood of the fish, and bait is not going to be an issue. The water levels are coming up, so hopefully most people can launch their boats in any body of water. So I really anticipate it's going to be a very, very good season and very good opener. The biggest factor here, too, is pick out a few spots before you launch that boat and figure out what you're going to start with for baits, and then sort of adhere to that plan, plan A, B, and C, and you will be successful. If you got a tougher bite going, so be it. If you got really a bad bite going, hey, go fish for some of those big slab crappies.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we forget sometimes walleyes aren't cooperative on opener, and sometimes the best walleye fishing is late in May and into June, and that opener time frame can be perfect for slab crappies.
Yeah, it really can. In fact, we were fishing up in about the center part of the state, and it was really one of those miserable Minnesota openers, cold and snow and wind, and we did not have a lot of success fishing walleyes, so we started fishing some of the reed edges and big slab crappies. So there's always that backup or that alternative, and hey, that's a lot of fun too.
Oh, you bet. No better eating fish than a big old slab crappie. Well, Terry, good to see you. Thanks for spending a segment with me. Good luck to you and your family on opener. We'll check in with you a little later this spring, early summer, see how the season is treating you.
Well, sounds great, Rob. I really appreciate that, and good luck to all of our anglers.
With that, let's get in a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Ready for your next fishing adventure? Look no further than Lake City, Minnesota. Located in southeast Minnesota, nestled along the shores of Lake Pepin, this charming town offers some of the best fishing in the Midwest. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, Lake Pepin is teeming with walleye, bass, and more. And when you're not on the water, explore Lake City's quaint shops, delicious dining, and scenic beauty. Go to visitlakecity.org today and plan your trip to Lake City, Minnesota's South Shore.
Fort Dodge, Iowa? Outdoor and entertainment adventures are awaiting you. Discover Iowa's largest off-highway vehicle park, Gypsum City OHV Park, with 60 miles of trails, mudding areas, tracks, and an obstacle course. The area also boasts water, paved mountain bike, and equestrian trails. Head into town to enjoy public art and studios, an orchard, aquatic center, and family entertainment venue. Fill up with excellent Korean cuisine, pizza, ice cream, craft beer, or local wines. For more information, visit DodgeTheOrdinary.com.
Since 1967, Outdoor News has been Minnesota's go-to news source for all things out of doors. Generations of hunters and anglers have welcomed Outdoor News into their home each week, enjoying the most up-to-date news, features, columnists, fishing and hunting reports, gear reviews, and much, much more. For less than a dollar a week, you can join thousands of other Minnesota sportsmen and continue the long-standing tradition of subscribing to Outdoor News. Both print and digital versions are available. Start your subscription today at outdoornews.com/subscribe.
Okoboji, Iowa has thousands of acres of lakes for fishing and public land for hunting, making it Iowa's best outdoor playground all year long. Start planning your next trip to Okoboji for fishing, hunting, swimming, or camping in one of our state parks. When you get off the water, enjoy our many locally owned restaurants and attractions, making Okoboji a favorite destination for your entire family. Plan your next trip at vacationokoboji.com. Okoboji, Iowa's best outdoor playground.
Looking for the perfect summer getaway? Look no further than Minnesota's own Lake of the Woods. Welcome to the walleye capital of the world, where the next hook set could be your personal best fish of a lifetime. But it's not just about the fishing. From cozy resorts to charming lodges, Lake of the Woods offers summer fun for everyone. Plus, our charters and expert fishing guides are ready to make your experience unforgettable. Discover the magic of Lake of the Woods. Visit lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Every 2 seconds, someone special needs blood. A friend, a family member, a coworker. Someday, it could be you. In fact, right now, patients in local hospitals are relying on Memorial Blood Centers to be there with the blood they need to survive. And that means we're relying on you to step up and make a life-saving difference. Make a date to help save a life. Visit mbc.org today to make an appointment to donate blood. That's mbc.org.
Hey folks, welcome back. Final segment of this week's broadcast of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Jerisline coming at you with our friend Tim Lesmeister is going to help me wrap up this week's broadcast. Read Tim in the print version of Outdoor News. Call 800-535-5191 or you can subscribe to print or digital at outdoornews.com. Tim, welcome. Good to see you. We've got a fishing opener next weekend already.
It's going to be an interesting opener. I really believe that the early spring that we've had here, the early ice out, means that walleye anglers can skip out of the shallows if they want and go do what they love to do, which is fish deep structure with live bait rigs. You know, every walleye angler I know loves to be able to spot fish on the sonar and target those schools, and they like to fish the deeper structure. They can see the fish. They don't get all snagged up, and the contour lines are usually straight. So I think this is going to be one of those openers where the walleye anglers are going to do quite well on that deep structure. And I think that the fact that there was a lot less pressure this winter means that we have a lot more fish in the system. So that's going to help anglers a lot. It's going to be a banner opener.
Well, I suspect we'll talk maybe some more fishing tactics with next week's broadcast, but I want to wish everybody good luck next week's fishing opener. We had Tackle Terry a little bit earlier offering some tactics. But I thought you and I might spend a little time on a topic that really blew up last week. People are still talking about it. I think it applies to this show because it involved a hunting dog. It's the Kristi Noem story out of South Dakota. Governor Noem out there apparently writing in her own book that she shot her dog. It was a wire hair pointer. I guess it was 20 years ago, she's saying now. And, you know, there's a couple points. You know, how do we feel about someone shooting a young dog like this, a 14-month-old dog? This was not an old, sick dog. And do we think this hurt her political career? Curious where you fall on this, Tim.
Well, if you come from a farm background, taking out an animal that is killing chickens or biting people is not an unusual occurrence. When that happens, you know, a lot of times these farmers, they don't take the dog to the vet to have it put down and pay the vet some money to do it. They just basically take the dog out back behind the barn and they drop a .22 into its head. That's what happens on farms. And I think that might rile up a lot of people. You know, maybe today, because, you know, people think a little, I think they think of animals as a little more trainable, that maybe they would see sending that dog to a pound where it might get picked up as a rescue animal and some of that aggressive behavior trained out of it. So I think today people look at something like this and they're appalled. But 20 years ago, I bet nobody thought twice about what she did.
Well, I think folks would have thought twice about it. 20 years ago, it might have been more acceptable, but I still think it was a think twice kind of moment. But where do I fall on this? So here's an example. When Gary Clancy was writing for Outdoor News, he wrote a lot about a dog named Meg. I think it was a little, was it English Spaniel or a Brittany Spaniel, something like that.
Yeah, it was a Spaniel, and it was one of those. I don't think it was a Springer. I do believe it might have been a Brittany.
Yeah, and he wrote about Meg. He wrote about a lot of his dogs over the years. Everybody loved Gary's stories about his dogs. And Meg got to be 13, 14 years old and was sick and was ill and could probably hardly walk anymore. And Gary wrote about taking her for one last walk and, you know, digging a hole, digging a pit to bury Meg in and putting her down with a gun and laying her and burying himself. And, you know, I printed it. I didn't really even think twice about printing it, even though when I grew up, we had dogs that we took to the vet for a shot, which, by the way, isn't expensive. I would like to point that out, that if it breaks you to take the dog to the vet and have it put down with a shot, especially a wire hair pointer that costs, you know, these days thousands of dollars, something doesn't quite sync up there. But anyway, when Gary wrote that piece, Tim, I had a fairly substantial backlash to it. I had some letters to the editor. I had a couple calls. I had a guy call with a voice deeper than mine, about my age, I was guessing, in absolute hysterics about this was illegal and I'm calling the cops. And, you know, I was just like, you know, whoa, calm down. And to this day, I feel this way. And I think it tended to be with older people. Gary would probably be pushing 80 now if he were still with us. I've had some uncles that felt this way, that it was a personal responsibility, that you were shirking your responsibility if you did not put your dog down yourself when it was old, that was an act of mercy, that was an act of responsibility. And people like Gary Clancy did it with respect. It was a solemn thing with reverence. And it's hard to argue, right, when the dog is old and sick. That wasn't this situation. This was a dog that Christy Nome apparently couldn't control. It was a wire hair pointer. That's not something you just go to the pound and get a dog with bad genes. She probably paid a lot of money for it. I don't know if she thought owning this dog would give her some hunting bona fides. It's a wire hair pointer, great pheasant dog. And then had no clue how to train it, apparently, or was willing to invest in the training. And then instead of taking it, finding it in another home, a young dog, or taking it to the pound so they can potentially find a new owner, and I would think they could for a wire hair pointer, or just saying, you know what, we got to keep this dog under control. It's apparently not a hunting dog. It's going to spend the rest of its life on the couch. You know, she took it to a gravel pit and shot it. I think it's hurt her career politically.
I don't like the idea of shooting dogs to put them down. It's not a good way to do things. I think taking an animal to the vet when they're just suffering is a good way to do it, because it's, you know, they go to sleep and their heart stops, they die. Shooting an animal, you know, it might take 3 or 4 shots and they might suffer for a while as they slowly die. So I don't like that idea of shooting a dog. Never have, or any animal, by the way, to actually put it down. But if I wound an animal when I'm hunting it, I'll do a quick kill shot. Like a deer, you just basically a quick kill shot to the neck. But again, let's go back to Christy Nome. What she did, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because, again, I think that there are people that probably would have been able to take that dog and train it and maybe make it a dog that is a benefit to society and not a burden to society. Although you do have dogs that just are untrainable. I've got a friend who got a rescue dog from South Dakota. Actually, this was during COVID. And this dog is very aggressive, has bitten a few people in the neighborhood. When they have people over to the house, they have to keep it in a kennel and put a blanket over it. So otherwise it will just bark continuously and try and chew its way out of the kennel. It's a very aggressive dog. Now, I don't know, what do you do with a dog like that? Mm-hmm. Do you, you know, it's only a few years old. Is it something that you take to the vet and say, I can't deal with this anymore, let's put it down? Maybe that's the only option that you have, but at least you're doing it humanely.
Yeah. They say there's no bad dogs, only bad owners. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I definitely think just like people, there's probably a few dogs out there. There's a few bears out there. They say, right there, don't they say there's a certain percentage of bears that are just sociopaths, and those are the ones you got to look out for in the woods.
Exactly.
And I think that's true about probably dogs too. Although we've been breeding dogs for thousands of years to eliminate the sociopaths in the gene pool, right? So it's a little bit different. But I do think there's, I think 99.9% of the time that holds true, that there are no bad dogs, there's bad owners. But that tenth of a percent, yeah, I think there's probably some young dogs that do need to be put down. My other gripe with this situation, though, is that Christine Ohm seemed to be kind of bragging about it. She seemed to be, at least from the initial reports, was like, yeah, look at me. I'm a true working farming woman, and we shoot animals. And it's one thing to put down an animal as an act of mercy. It's another thing to put an animal down as like a badge of, look how tough I am. And that's how I felt this initially played out.
That's a strong point that you make. I think that, you know, if you have a horse and it breaks a leg and it's, you know, way out in the field and you can't do anything,
sure,
you might want to, you know, hasta la vista horse.
Yep.
But you're not going to brag about it. You're going to say, boy, I really did not want to do that. You know, it's sad, but it's something that happens. In this particular case, you know, it's kind of like, look how tough I am. Look what a badass I can be.
Right.
You make a good point there. That's a bad attitude.
What do you think, Tim? Does this end her national political career?
Oh, absolutely. There's too many people on both sides of the political aisle that are animal lovers. And I think that when you put out something like this trying to prove a point, it actually backfires. You've just shot yourself in the foot. She's not going to be able to walk out of this easily because it's just too many people out there are going to say, you know what, Christy, we just don't like who you are.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Republican, hardcore Republican folks out there that are experts, dog training experts, who say you put down a 14-month-old wire hair pointer, you know, who are saying, I almost guarantee you I could have figured out a way to train that dog up. You know, times have changed. You know, 40, 50 years ago, this probably would have been a non-story. But today, it's 2024, and it is a story.
It's a huge story, and I think it's just going to keep exploding even in a greater volume. So good luck, Christy. I think you're going to need every ounce of it.
Tim, before we go, the forward-facing sonar thing, did you see that got a vote in Wisconsin? It was pretty close. It was like 33-30 with a whole bunch of people who are like, what is forward-facing sonar? I don't think that vote's going to do anything in Wisconsin, and I don't even really think it makes a whole lot of difference nationwide. But it was kind of interesting. Spielman and I were talking about it, that's one of the first votes we've had where we kind of get a temperature reading on how the general public feels about forward-facing sonar.
Yeah, I think that's the way they feel right now, and I believe that's the way they feeling when sonar first came onto the scene. But I love Tom Newstrom's quote. He says, technology can never be stopped. And he's right. It's always there. There's no way you can stop it. And I think the reason you can't stop it is because government moves too slow. By the time they get around to figuring out what they want to do with it, there's too much of it out there, and they can't do anything anyway.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And I think Newstrom's point is ultimately it's probably going to affect fishing limits, and I think he's right.
And it's going to affect the limits on the fish that are being targeted with the forward-facing sonar. That would be walleyes, and that would be crappies. And I think for a long time, those limits should have been reconsidered anyway. There's way too many crappies being taken, and the walleye limits could be dropped on most lakes, and it wouldn't be a problem.
Well, Tim, thanks for spending a segment with me. We will talk to you next weekend on Fishing Opener.
I can hardly wait.
Tim Lesmeister, I want to thank him, all of our other guests. Everybody, have a great week out of doors. Get set for next weekend's Fishing Opener. Rob Dreisland signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.